At democracynow.org. The screening's Friday and Saturday night at 7 and Saturday also at 4 p.m. We're hiring for an education program manager, fundraising and outreach interns. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now.
When they separated families, we took them to court and won. When they limited access to essential health care, we fought the bans and won. And now they're determined to reverse more of our hard-won rights and freedoms. But if they try to take away our rights, they've got to get past us. We are the American Civil Liberties Union, and we will fight any attempts to roll back our rights in the courts, in state legislatures, and in the streets.
When you're surrounded by oppressive laws, you can't just sit back and be oppressed. You get up and fight. And all of us at the ACLU are fighting for you.
Right now, the ACLU's work is more important than ever. The ACLU is fighting in the courts and advocating in all 50 states to ensure that all of us can exercise our rights. To learn more about ACLU's work defending our civil liberties, go to myaclu.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and to the entire world at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock Tuesday evening, time for another edition of Off the Wall. Ourselves. Okay, here we are. Yes, Off the Wall. Emmanuel here. Kyle over there.
Yes, my name is Kyle.
Yes, remember that, please. It's going to be a weird show because I'm completely cut off from the world intentionally. We watched the first half of the semifinal between France and Spain. Not going to talk about what happened because there might be people out there that haven't even seen that. But we haven't seen the second half yet. And any way you look, someone's going to tell you what happened. And I'd rather be surprised, like you're supposed to be. And, of course, tomorrow is the second semifinal, England-Argentina. That's really going to be something. But, yeah, World Cup is coming to an end. And another heat wave is at our throats. So we're going to have to deal with that in a blazing hot studio for the next hour. That seems like fun, doesn't it, Kyle?
Yeah, this is like air pollution light. It's very like orange and
it's stagnant.
Yeah, and heavy.
Yeah, but you notice that the air seemed orange. I mean, why?
I don't know if it's smog or something. I don't know. Just this like it's a really dark light. It's not like a clear day.
Uh huh.
Even though you can kind of see the sky, it's not like there's overcast.
It's kind of a metaphor.
Conditions.
For
it's strange.
Our society today, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I don't know. I was noticing it. The only other thing I can compare it to is like wildfire smoke. When you have like smoke blow in, the light kind of gets a little bit redder.
Uh-huh. There was a wildfire somewhere, but it wasn't anywhere around here. It was like on the West Coast or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it's hard to keep up with everything, but maybe it's some other effect.
With all the rain we got, though, over the last week, I don't want to hear any more talk about droughts, although I'm sure I will. But for God's sake, that's a lot of water that came down. It's so much. Flooding and everything like that. So let's hold on to some of that before we start saying we're in trouble because of no rain. Kyle, you had a major accomplishment this week. You went on your second Gold Coast ride, which is...
Yeah, we're not in trouble.
Yeah, you went
we're in
on
great
a,
condition.
You went on a longer ride than you did last year.
I'm surprised you brought this up. Okay. Yeah.
It's headline news. It really is. You rode 70 miles. 70 miles on a hot day on Sunday.
It was really warm, but it was beautiful. And I liked getting to know the neighborhood, as they say. I don't know. It was just a nice little jaunt. I wasn't training or anything. If everybody can relate, being busy with work and... You know, everybody in our personal lives, but I don't know, something to do. And I was really kind of nervous about it, but I had a lot of fun last year and I really liked getting to know some of the people in the local club and hear about other things that are going on in that world. And I mean, I just really have an affinity for that, even though it's like kind of punishing, but there's a lot of, things you can do like that you other things that you focus on it's helpful like for me to like clear my mind and I like to do that for exercise and it's been a little bit harder in recent years for me but anyway that was something that I had found out about through some of the bike shops and I just got some of my equipment together. This was the first year I actually bought myself water bottles. I've never bought myself a decent water bottle. Someone just usually gave me it. And I've been bicycling for 30 years.
Wow.
Which is kind of wild. Like one of my first tours I ever did was the Seattle to Portland when I was like 13.
13 years old, you went from Seattle to Portland on your bike. Did your parents know you were doing that?
I went with my father, yeah.
He rode a bike too?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And he had a family friend, or a family friend had gone with him in previous years, and I was getting interested, obviously. You know, you see, kind of like with the World Cup, it's very very much something you pass down, people that are passionate about a certain sport or something.
Tour de France was probably a better...
Yeah, analogy. That too, as a spectator sport. And it's not as popular in this country, but there's a lot of different ways to, you know, get outside and be active. And I was always inspired by our good friend Greg, also being interested in like running and ultra marathons and triathlete type stuff and mushing. So like I was thinking of him. There's actually a street out there called Greg Lane, but the last year after I did it, when he heard my time, he was like, oh, that's respectable. So I was really kind of hoping to get out there and do a little bit further, explore some different parts of the North Shore that I'm just not familiar with the roads. And I'm not going to be critical. I mean, drivers, there's a huge population density. And I didn't grow up with that. Where I'm from, there was a lot less people. And, Yeah, road safety is super important if you want to continue to be able to bicycle. And I'm really enthused by some of the road improvements, infrastructure improvements, and bicycle paths that are connecting. The Empire State Trail is really intriguing to me. And also GPS. Like, I really like that's the gizmos. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could go on and on, but...
Well, you had a GPS device, and you downloaded a file.
Yeah.
I believe it's the .fit format, the file extension.
Yep.
And that tells you what roads to turn down. And the people at this club that you were a part of did a very good job of keeping you off the main roads for the most part. And you were kind of going through side streets the whole time, you know, little developments. Did you ever really have a lot of traffic to deal with?
Let's see. Maybe crossing busier intersections, mm-hmm. and in some places on the way to St. James, and parts of the loop that you would do, there were you'd return to certain spots and certain rest stops, support stops that they had.
I know there's one driver in Smithtown that earned your ire.
That was towards the end,
but only one.
It was further than that. I think that was a lot closer towards the starting point, and I was feeling the heat. And
maybe
it was,
Comac, that would explain a lot.
Yeah, it was somewhere out there, like closer to where I was returning to, and he cut me off,
but you let him know.
I couldn't help myself. I'm not usually like that. It's usually very pleasant. And I would say, like, a lot of the drivers were super conscious of all the different activities, or a lot of other people just doing their normal weekend thing. And they responded well to, like, hand signaling and all the stuff that cyclists do. There's a lot of motorcycle people out. I know the motorcycle community tends to do, like, Sunday rides and stuff like that.
They respect bicyclists because they know what you're going through. And signals, they understand that.
Yep.
I like to think that motorists have gotten more educated as far as keeping cyclists safe. When I was a kid, I know that wasn't the case because, you know, I'd have bottles thrown at me by people as they drove by. People shouting in your ear. I don't know what the issue was. I just didn't like seeing anyone other than cars on the road. But I don't think that happens as much. I know there's a lot of idiots out there. I'm always talking about that. But my cycling endeavors of recent years have been much better than when I was growing up. So it's a little bit of optimism I'm clinging to there.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of it has a lot to do with being prepared to be out there, how visible you are without communicating to drivers. But obviously, like, doing appropriate hand signaling, and if you're in a group, announcing hazards and stuff to other riders, which was part of the electronic mapping, which is really handy too. And I'm getting to learn some of that, but it makes it a lot better when when you look the part. You know, you want to make sure you're doing everything you can to be visible, and you have a helmet. If someone, you know, I've had things thrown at me. When I commuted, I had people throw, like, drink bottles or drinks, like, different cartons or something at me, like, as I'm coming home from work, and that's terrible. Like, it really, like, out of a pickup or something. But I think, like, now with the amount of technology and stuff, like, the ability to kind of recall what vehicle or what kind of hazard someone presented as, where exactly it happened, even like cameras.
You might be filming.
Yeah, there's dash cams on other drivers' vehicles. I could have a camera on my bike. A lot of riders are using GoPros and different things. Motorcyclists use GoPros. Specifically, I think, because of insurance and traffic and incursions with four-wheeled
vengeance too.
Yeah, absolutely, road rage. So and of course, even altercations or interactions with police, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, I'm saying that with a heavy glance.
Are we talking current events? Yes, we'll get to that, folks. We're not just going to talk about cycling all hour, but
it's a fun subject. I could talk about it all hour. It's frankly great,
but, you know, you mentioned hand signals, and I know we're on the
stop
radio.
Me and,
I know we're on the radio.
Yeah,
and it might be silly.
Okay,
but I think we should give a quick tutorial on hand signals. And the reason I say that, you know, someone could look online a video or something like that. But they won't. Maybe you're driving in your car right now and you hear us talking about hand signals. And if you have no idea what the hand signals are, let's quickly describe them so that if you see somebody on a bicycle in front of you and they're giving a hand signal, you'll know what it means. There aren't that many of them. You know, there's left turn?
Three.
There's three. That's it.
Three basic ones that I mean, and some people do them differently than me. There's three basic hand signals that I know.
There's the fourth one that you used on that driver in
Cullman. Oh, yeah, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We all know that one, but that's we're not going to talk about that.
That is something I would caution cyclists to use. In fact, you know, like, yeah, I question the wisdom of that in my own moment of weakness, but I was feeling it, you know, it was a long day. But anyway, basic hand signal for left is straight out, arm straight out to the left, right?
Arm straight out to the left. So yeah. Cyclist doing that, that means we're about to make a left turn.
Yeah. But you know what else it's useful for? And I do this maybe, especially if I hear, if I'm on a narrow road and I have cars passing me, you sort of do that same thing, like a left arm straight out as though you're doing a left turn. I kind of lower it, kind of pointing at the road. Kind of indicating like
you're about to fall off.
Either you can pass or, you know, take your lane here, like alongside me, or share the road, or, you know, you basically are just pointing, indicating that you're going to be continuing in this lane to kind of say it's okay to pass. You know, I'm putting my hand out.
Kind of relaxed. Your hands kind of relaxed.
Right.
I'm just going along here.
It conveys a lot of things, but it's kind of an acknowledgement that you know the vehicle's there. You can hear them. And this is another thing. I don't wear headphones or anything. I don't even play a boombox or
phone. No, that's smart. Pay attention to the road.
You need all your senses when you're cycling and you're, whether you're commuting or just out recreationally.
Right.
So, okay. So lower left arm, kind of helpful for just acknowledging that, you know, a car either has slowed to wait to pass, or they're anticipating a moment they could pass, or looking for an opportunity for you to wave them on. You could also be, you know, gently waving them with a lowered left arm. The other one is arm out, but the left hand is up at a 90 degree angle. So you bend your elbow and your left hand is straight up. So you have kind of a your arm out and then your elbow is bent 90 degrees and your hand is straight up.
So it's like an L.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you can do straight up with your hand. I like to do a fist.
Okay.
Because I feel like, you know, that's like
empowerment.
It's You know, I like the fist. You know, like the left, the right turn. I'm going right. Like I'm doing this. It's commanding.
A message.
You don't have to be like that. Nah. You don't have to be like that. All right, tough guy. But either way, you know, you want that 90 degree with the elbow and your arm, your forearm straight up. Got it? Okay, so that's a right turn.
That's right turn.
Now, the opposite of that is a right angle down, same fist. Now, this is where, like, okay, you could do an open hand. You could also do a fist, but you just have to have that arm down and that bend in your elbow. That's I'm stopping.
You're stopping. Okay. Now, why would a driver need to know that you're stopping?
There could be a whole variety of things. It depends on the intersection.
Okay.
It may just be, it's hard to describe unless you're in different scenarios. I don't use that as much, because a lot of, a lot of normal traffic rules for both cars and bicycles are fairly intuitive. Like you will stop at appropriate times at intersections. That's not always the case with four ways and stop signs. That's a whole other topic of conversation, and I think attitudes around that vary socially and legally, depending on the city, depending on the density, depending on the busyness of certain streets and the context. Like I was out on a road tour this weekend, and I wasn't stopping at every stop sign, but a lot of them were uncontrolled and there were no cars.
Right.
So it's different when cars do that. I don't think that's as safe.
No, they shouldn't do
because
that.
Because cars blasting through four-way stops, you run the risk of a pedestrian or someone that isn't a car.
Well, you run that risk with a
bike, doing
the
same thing.
With a bike, you run the same risk. And especially in an urban environment, you just have to be a little bit more careful with what, you know, you're passing.
Yeah, and I think of this, I did a lot of downhill skiing and alpine and ski racing, and like skiing within your limits. I think the same applies with cycling, like ride within your limits, your limitations of your equipment, the limitations of your physical condition at that moment, and you know, your judgment, and you should be good. To avoid injury, you know, that's part of your own judgment and how you approach those different challenges and I really like that. That all the negotiating, the problem solving, that's what I mean by, like, there's so many other things to think about. The stressors of daily life just disappear because you're focused in the present.
And, you know, you see a lot more people riding, some people on your ride as well that you were riding with, which is great. I actually met you. I drove out to, you know, grab you a coffee and just give you a thumbs up and all that.
That was the coolest thing ever. No one's ever done that when I'm out, like, riding. And it was really, like, it was very chic.
Well, it got me up early in the morning for once. And, you know, I went out to the Oldfield Lighthouse. If you've never done that. You know, it's the only non-contentious time I've ever been out there, because every time I went to Oldfield, which is, it's basically this rich neighborhood, and it's a long dead end road that ends at the waterfront, and people like to go there and look at the scenery, and invariably a cop will come and give you a ticket, and you get into a whole big back and forth. And you know, one time I got a ticket and I had to go to the lighthouse, which is adjacent to that, because they have a courthouse inside the lighthouse where people pay their tickets. So I'd never had a pleasant time there. This time, though, thanks to you, I was able to turn into that little parking lot. And I found out it's a park that's open to the public and, you know, no tickets, no contentious, it's nothing like that. I was able to have a nice time and see you come by, and you got your picture taken and all that.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
The last thing I'll say is just wear helmets, people. If you see young people, new bicyclists, anybody out there, please encourage people to wear helmets. Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of a zealot about it, but I think, like, if you do any kind of adventurous sports, I'm thinking about, like, skateboarding or, you know, stuff where you're prone to fall, like, learn how to fall and wear protective equipment so you can get back up and get better and do more and not be injured.
Yeah, you know, people think it doesn't apply to them. People on scooters, bikes, skateboards, but, you know, especially skateboards. Just watch a bunch of skateboarders and see how, if you can hold your breath long enough for one of them to fall. They're falling all the time. I don't know if they fall on their heads, but, you know, at some point you're going to hit your head. And okay, you might look a little goofy with a helmet on, but you'll be a lot safer and you'll be skating a lot more. So it's, you know, it's worth it.
Oh, no. Helmets are really cool. And if you see people with cool helmets, say, hey, I like your helmet. That's a cool helmet.
Yeah.
You know, it can encourage people to wear their helmet because they were acknowledged for wearing it. So just something I like to throw in there since we've been talking about.
Maybe, how about this? The skateboard companies can get involved with the helmet companies.
Oh, I think they do.
Do they? Okay. Yeah. Make it a package deal. Like, no, you can't buy the skateboard unless you buy a helmet too.
That might be, oh, wow, yeah. And the, yeah, you get your skateboarding license. Or, no, I don't think this is going to happen.
No, this is the 21st century. The skateboard will stop operating if there isn't a helmet within a certain amount of distance from the skateboard.
Oh, okay. I like that.
I.e. like 4 feet or however tall the skateboarder is.
Right.
And okay, you don't have a helmet on, skateboard doesn't work anymore. You know, it locks up like one of those grocery carts.
Or like
when you try to take it out of the parking
or
lot.
Or like airbags or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We got to keep our kids safe, whether they us to or not.
Yeah. It's all about the,
All right. Well, that's awesome. I'm so happy you did that. It's inspirational, and I hope people out there listening will get involved and just get some exercise.
Thanks for the encouragement.
Of course. And let's find out about more bike clubs in the area, because they exist everywhere. They really do. And if you have something to share, please write to us, otw@2600.com.
Yeah, I really want to do more. It's something I like doing as much as possible, but it gets tough to integrate, and it's not. It's super easy. It's super fun to be out there, especially when it's beautiful and there's other people and you can hear the world around you and interact.
But, okay, let's head out east now. Not on a bicycle, but just in our minds.
Okay.
We've driven out east, you know, out to Greenport. And do you recall, Kyle, on the way, we would pass a farm where somebody would hang a flag from a crane. Do you remember that? It was basically something we saw every time, where it said, "Thank you, God," or something like that.
There was a couple. I think there's like a barn side. There's like a barn side. Then
maybe
there's
was a truck.
There's another there was a truck. There's like another place that's got like sort of like a religious, I think a big crucifix or
something. There's a lot of that going on out there. But you know,
this
might not be the same guy. I'm not sure because I don't know everybody out there.
I know the type.
Well, this guy is named Douglas Cooper, which is a great name for a farmer. And basically, he hangs a large American flag from a crane outside his North Fork farm stand. He does it around Memorial Day, Veterans Day. He often adds a sign with a message saying, "Thank you." See, I thought I saw "Thank you, God," or "Thank you, Jesus," or something like that, which, you know, it's fine. And for Independence Day this year, as the nation celebrated its 250th anniversary, and what a smashing time that was, the 78-year-old farmer and Mattituck School Board Vice President opted for a message directed at the highest office in the nation in red lettering. You know what he wrote? 8647. He wrote it on a board posted above the flag that hung over Breakwater Road. Yeah, that's one farmer that gets it.
Okay, I'm listening.
He said that means let's throw the bum out. Well, the Secret Service came by. Because all you have to do is put up four numbers on a sign and the Secret Service will pay you a visit.
Oh, I bet he was ready for that.
Well, I don't know. They investigated the perceived threat against the president and stirred local debate over the limits of free speech and whether school officials should be held to different standards.
Whoa.
Wow.
This, wait, doth my ears deceive me? From the party of I can say whatever because, you know.
Well, maybe these were Democrats who were upset. You don't know.
Oh, okay, right.
He sounds like a,
you know. Yeah, feed me that soup. Go on.
Could
come
have been
on.
A right-winger that, you know, had enough. I don't know. The term 86 commonly means to remove something, but has been construed in conservative circles as having a more violent undertone when referencing Trump. And I just want to focus on that sentence one more time. It's been construed as having a more violent undertone, but only when referencing Trump. So you could say 86 Biden, and that's fine. But if you say 86 Trump, oh, that's a problem. Yeah, that's
spare
a problem.
Spare me.
Yeah, because he's held to a different standard.
I have no time for this. Uh-huh. Balderdash.
Cooper, an interview Friday with Newsday at the farm stand where he sold tomatoes, zucchini, peppers, and more for decades. Don't have an entire list here. Sunchokes, possibly, and maybe corn, some corn, and I don't know if there's lettuce. But anyway, he said he had no intention of promoting violence, not surprisingly. The Secret Service visit was first reported Friday by the Suffolk Times. That's right, the Suffolk Times. Read it. Learn something. It lasted about 30 minutes. Now, Cooper is a registered Republican who did not vote for Trump. He described the two agents as professional and courteous and said he understood they had a job to do. I wasn't doing anything wrong. He said, we have freedom of speech. I just wanted to make my views known.
I think he did, too, and he clarified it. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
And he took the flag down for good on Thursday and only keeps it up for a couple of days around holidays. The crane he uses to hoist the flag wouldn't start earlier in the week when he first wanted to take it down due to the rain, he said, which we mentioned earlier. A similar 8647 message landed former FBI Director James Comey in hot water and facing a two-count indictment as prosecutors alleged a photo he posted of the phrase was a threat against Trump. You know, this administration is reaching so hard for, you know, whether it's the reflecting pool or people just basically using numbers or anything. They take such offense and are so quick to jump.
The administration is feigning victimhood?
It's, you know, it really is a weapon of bullies. You know, I know this growing up, that, you know, if you did anything to push back against a bully, all of a sudden they were the complainant and they would be believed because they had a louder voice. And even though you were a third the size of the other person, you were the problem in the eyes of the authorities because they didn't want a problem with the bully either or the bully's family. I don't want to get into this. Anyway, a spokesperson for the Secret Service said in an email on Friday, the agency investigates anything that can be perceived as a threat toward our protectees. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Protectees? Is Trump a protectee? Who's he protecting other than himself? He doesn't protect any of us. He doesn't protect anything.
No, God. It's their protectee, person they serve.
They serve him. They're not supposed to serve him. They're supposed to serve the American people.
Well, yeah. Their secret services are for the protectee, the person that's being...
Maybe the services shouldn't be a secret. I think they should be out in the open. But anyway, let's move along. Judy Tilburg, who's 75 years old, longtime Mattituck resident, said she noticed the sign on 4th of July morning when heading to Breakwater Beach. She found it to be inappropriate. and a wrong message for kids. Well, Judy, first of all, kids don't read signs.
Or understand numbers very well.
Second of all, who the heck do you think you are telling us what's inappropriate? This guy has freedom of speech, you know? If he was saying something pro-Trump, you know, yeah, it might offend people like us, but people aren't saying, hey, you know, you have to take your sign down on your own property. I mean, look, we learned that lesson in Port Jefferson with this George Wallace guy who owns the busy corner, and he always put up these Trump signs, and people would get angry. And, you know, they had a reason to be angry because he was violating zoning laws in commercial district. That's different. You know, hanging something outside your house is different than hanging something outside a commercial area where there are multiple people running businesses and you don't speak for them. But he challenged the law, gets in the paper every now and then. Oh, and by the way, guess who's back at that intersection?
TJ.
That's right. Thomas Jefferson has returned. Back in 2002, the very same George Wallace removed Thomas Jefferson from the corner of Broadway and Route 25A in Port Jefferson Village, replaced it with an eagle to commemorate the 9/11 victims, which, you know, was a nice sentiment, but a very symbolic stripping of our perception of liberty. You say a lot of things about Thomas Jefferson, but, you know, having somebody there that the town is named after is more appropriate than, you know, a big fist in the air, which is what the eagle represented.
It's a raptor rapture.
I even wrote a letter to Newsday about that, and it got printed. Because it was, you know, basically, it's like tearing down Lenin, tearing down Stalin. You know, when the Soviet Union had its little experiment with democracy, you know, and it was Russia, and then became Putinville. That was basically, you know, it was the same thing, tearing down a statue. And they pulled down Thomas Jefferson and put him in a landfill somewhere. Who knows where he was for the last 24 years. But he just suddenly came back. So if you go to that intersection now, Thomas Jefferson is there again. So thanks, George Wallace, for finally bringing Thomas Jefferson back. Please leave him alone.
Yeah, there's actually an inscription talking about happiness. Like, imagine that.
It's, happiness?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that in a while. Whoa. Okay, all right.
Something's going on. I don't know.
I'll listen.
If people are expressing themselves and they had... this is why I think we got to stay focused on the referendum that is in the fall, and that...
We're still doing that?
Every bit of what you should be doing is activating and mobilizing and getting a ground game going to say what needs to be said at the polling place, at the ballot box, for real.
I heard a rumor that Thursday Trump's going to announce that we're not doing that anymore. No more elections.
Well, he's scared about something.
Uh-huh.
He's very a
nationwide,
afraid.
Amy
he's
was got, talking about it before, nationwide address.
He's anxious. Uh-huh. He's got concerns, and he wants us to know about them.
Yeah, that elections don't work because he's going to lose.
The ones, the sort that he was elected into office on, got it. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can't wait. It'll be a doozy.
Okay, let's get back to Judy. She said that if Cooper were merely a farmer, the sign wouldn't have bothered her. But in his capacity as an elected member of the school board in the community where she lives, first of all, Judy, you're 75. How do you even know who's on the school board and why do you care? I mean, and how does that elevate somebody to a higher standard? I don't know who's on the school board. I couldn't care less, but they're free to say whatever they want, just like anybody else is. Anyway, in his capacity as an elected member of the school board in the community where she lives, she believes he should be held to a higher standard and avoid derogatory political messaging. Okay, 8647 is not a derogatory message, all right? It just isn't. You're making it derogatory in your head, but kicking Trump out is a beautiful concept. It's a natural concept. It's something that we all, you know, aspire to express at some point.
Super triggered. They are so triggered right now.
This farmer's not a king. You can't hold him to a higher standard. Come on, let him talk.
And it's about the pursuit of happiness. That makes people happy.
Well, there's
don't you want that for this country?
A lot of pursuing lately and not catching. She posted a photo of Cooper's sign on her Facebook page earlier this week. So you're spreading the message. Look at that. You're spreading the message. Posted a photo of the sign on her Facebook page, along with a copy of an email she sent to the president of the school board calling it disgraceful. Judy is the one who caused all the problems. People can have their own opinion, she said in an interview. No, that's it. Just telling us we can have our own opinion. Judy says it's okay. Thank you, Judy. No, she went on. He can put a sign out that he hates Trump and everything else. I don't care. Really? Okay. I don't care. But when you're the vice president of the school board, you're trying to educate these kids. Okay, I think you might be a little confused. The teachers are the ones who are educating the kids. This guy's not even president of the school board. He's the vice president of the school board. I'm not sure how much contact he even has with kids, let alone educating them. And again, as I pointed out at the beginning, kids aren't reading a lot of signs up in the air on cranes by farms. Cooper said, "No, this is. I love the East End. I just they're filled with stories like this." Cooper said he had no concerns about posting the sign, given his role as the school board's vice president, something nobody knew about until now. He said he notified the school superintendent about the Secret Service visit and explained what happened. He said it's up to the public to decide whether he serves on the board. I'm not sure if he is the school superintendent or Cooper himself. Cooper attended last Thursday's school board meeting, but the Secret Service visit was not discussed because it's not an issue, except for the fact that they're wasting their time. Liz Weiss, 85 years old, of Jamesport, drove out to the farm stand Friday morning with her daughter to support Cooper. "You're a brave and smart man," she said to the farmer. Well, let's leave it there. I like how that ended. Yeah, put up signs, folks. Express yourselves. Don't be afraid. There's a lot of fear out there, a lot of ugliness. And we've heard two horrible stories in the past week involving ICE murdering people in the street. First one was in Houston. Second one more recently in Maine. Let's focus on Maine for the moment. Valerie Brinkman was washing dishes in her apartment yesterday morning. This is very recent. When she heard what sounded like several gunshots ring out in the streets below, I heard a loud noise that broke me out of a mental fog. She looked out of her kitchen window, which overlooks the corner of Pool and Hill Streets, and she saw a white car circling in the intersection. Three people who appeared to be federal agents wearing what looked like bulletproof vests were screaming at whoever was in the car. Fun fact, the person who was in the car was dead because they had already killed him. Yeah, they killed the guy because he didn't stop to their liking, or, you know, it's very unclear. But basically what we do know is that these plainclothes goons wearing no uniform and driving unmarked cars basically surrounded the car or jumped in front of it. I don't know. There's no video of this because they were not wearing body cams, even though these guys get like $1 trillion out of our tax dollars to support their insanity. They won't put on cameras to capture what they do. And when asked, they somehow try to blame that on Democrats, you know, saying, well, if you hadn't shut down the government months ago, we would have cameras. And it's just utter nonsense because they had the money the whole time. Anyway, Basically, this was not even the guy they were looking for. They just basically tried to get somebody to do what they said. No identification, nothing. And nobody really knows what happened. We know their story. Their story is that he, and this is what they say all the time, he weaponized his car, meaning he tried to run somebody over. But there's no indication that that is actually what happened. And there's every indication that ICE agents lie, because when they are caught on video, it doesn't match their story at all. The two cases in Minnesota in January have proven this. And those people, were they even arrested? Were they even put in jail? Are they even named? I don't even know, because we're not talking about it anymore.
Yeah, the whole like qualified immunity and like protected, the fact they can't be held responsible, all of those issues are just, they just become so glaring and obvious and giant, you know, like red flags and buzzing and flashing alarms. Like, we really have to take a look at what policing is. And I this is the extreme. This is the federal police force run amok completely with billions and billions and billions of our dollars. And I mean, the politicians looking like so flat-footed after these things. I think, like, people talking about, like, Susan Collins' record and the amount of money she appropriated or voted for in the appropriations. I don't know if that was in the article you just read. There's so much about this that is, again, don't miss the point here. We need to register all of the feelings around all of these issues, whether it's healthcare or anything, like, regardless of, you know, what you're registered or what you affiliate with, you know, on paper. If this bothers you, if the way some of this stuff is going in society doesn't look like an improvement, people that are doing bad jobs explaining what they voted for to make this happen need to be removed. They need to be diselected and replaced with competence.
And more than removed, they need to be held accountable.
Well, there's that too. Like,
there's blood on their hands.
It's pretty awful. And I was thinking about this. I think this applies to some of the other global conflicts and ways we should think about our power as people. We know our own corruption better than anyone else. We do. Like, you know things to do and not to do, and like pitfalls and traps and hustles. That's something local, like the people on the street, colloquial knowledge is based around that. Societies are best suited to understand where and how corruption is manifested and how it could be alleviated or remediated or removed or upended altogether, at least investigated and put under some scrutiny. Because at this point, it's like, it's so manifestly corrupt and buried under layers and layers and layers of corruption. And I really think, like, to remind the people that are at the ballot boxes that they are the check on that, and they cannot be misinformed, and they cannot be lulled into lies and mischaracterizations that are put forth in ad campaigns or AI now, that kind of like augmented political advertising. All of that needs to be quickly fact-checked and fingerprinted and annotated. Even in anticipation of this Thursday thing on elections, people are already pre-filling people's understanding and contextualizing what he's going to be lying about so that everybody is inoculated. I mean, this is like a psychological vaccine in the midst of psychological warfare. And I think that applies around the world right now, that, you know your own corruption, know where it manifests, and even, you know, look to do your best work and avoid being corruptible. But we know it best, and we can police it best, and we need to understand the ballot box is a fantastic place to cleanse and otherwise remediate and just mix it up a little bit for the future.
It is a good place for that, but I sense that people are impatient and don't want to wait till November to see any kind of change. They want this crap to stop now. People are in the streets in Maine. It's getting very passionate. You know, any other country, they'd be burning down ICE headquarters. They would be, you know, chasing after these people. They would be holding them accountable. And, you know, I don't know what the best move is, but I do know that if there is no progress, every action afterwards is going to get more and more desperate. And, you know, I sure don't want a violent situation. But boy, are people being pushed. And I'm not talking about people who are trying to immigrate to this country. I'm talking about people who have been born in this country that are pissed off, that have had enough, that say, this is not the country that I recognize, and I want this to stop right now. I'm one of those people. I really am. I want ICE to completely stop what it's doing. Any action that prevents them, whether it's flattening their tires or barricading the road that they come out on, or just surrounding the building with protesters, that is a plus for democracy, absolutely. And we just cannot let this climate of fear take over, where somebody can just be gunned down in their car. And yeah, you know, the conservatives will say, oh, but he didn't obey commands. Well, first of all, there's no evidence that that's what happened. ICE reports contradict DHS reports. One report says he weaponized his car. The other report said he was trying to flee, which is, they contradict each other. And, you know, elected officials are pointing this out. There are no comments from the people in charge. They're quiet. Meanwhile, lots of people who are local residents, they're speaking out. They're spreading information. The only videos we have seen are coming from people's own personal cameras. And that's all we have to go on. They refuse to wear their body cameras as they are supposed to. And when we do have actual footage of these horrible events happening, they have been shown time and time again to be lying. And in this particular case, again, the guy was not who they were looking for. He was in the country legally. But the way that they phrase it, the official statement was an illegal alien exited the house. An illegal alien tried to escape. You know, it makes you feel like they're not even human. And when you say this guy actually, he had a social security number, he had a job, he was in the country legally, there is absolutely no reason they should have gone after him for any reason. You know, he was from Colombia. He was probably, you know, cheering the World Cup only a few days ago, like the rest of us. It's sick. It's disgusting. Now, one of the witnesses said that it took 10 minutes for an ambulance to arrive. An emergency responder was the only one that ran towards that man to attempt to save his life. But regardless of his status or who he is as a person, it's not up to ICE to decide if he dies in the street or not. Yeah. And as I said, that's the second case in a few days. There is a case of Lorenzo Salgado Araujo, who was killed by ICE agents in Houston. DHS said the victim tried to run over a federal agent, but guess what? There are witnesses. They were inside the vehicle, so they had a pretty good look. They said that did not happen. After speaking with the three men that were in the vehicle with Lorenzo, there is no doubt that what they are saying is the truth. Said, I believe this is a lawyer that was speaking with them. All three reiterated that at no point was an agent standing in front of the vehicle, nor was an agent placed in the line of danger. Again, no body cameras being worn. Same basic statement saying that somebody tried to weaponize their vehicle. There is plenty of video of the car apparently being chased by two SUVs, unmarked SUVs. Now, if you are being pursued by unmarked cars and people with guns, you know, there's a very good reason to think that maybe this is a crime. And this person had every right to run away from them. In fact, he was in Texas. He had every right to kill those people, believe it or not. Yeah. So what's going to happen when people finally stand up and take out some of these ICE agents who are acting like criminals?
You mean
because they don't identify themselves, they're not uniformed, and they're being intimidating. Okay, so the Second Amendment, does it not apply? This is what you people voted for. And here it is. Here it is. You could not think of a better use for standing up for yourself. Somebody threatening you with vehicles and a gun. You know, the governor of Texas, he pardoned somebody who stated that he wanted to go out and run somebody over in a protest, and then went and did exactly that and killed somebody. He was pardoned by the governor of Texas after being found guilty. The governor of Florida threatened protesters, saying, we will kill you with our cars if you're standing in the street. The governor of Florida said that. Not in those exact words, but that was the intent. So with all this in mind, somebody inches forward a little bit in the car, and that's grounds for you to just off them. People are really, really, really getting fed up with this. And it's getting to the point where you all ought to be scared, because there's a lot more citizens than there are ICE agents. And everybody, left and right, is beginning to feel this. It's disgusting.
Yeah. I don't think that the people that responded immediately, as soon as they saw some of the videos and as soon as they realized the facts of what happened in that specific case in Maine, they were out in the streets immediately. And it, as responsive and loud and due that was, it was exceedingly reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that this administration had better not mistake for complacency. Because, like you said, we do have a right to protect ourselves from revenuers, from the feds. And if that's the kind of situation that it's going to have to be, if we're being pushed to that en masse, then, I mean, I don't know what is left. I'm talking mm-hmm. about the political process. I'm talking about voting. I'm talking about ground game and activating people that are coming into the voting process and messaging and getting platforms that speak to people. But we will definitely bust back at you. That's happened.
At some point, you know, we're pretty damn patient, but at some point that patience runs out. And when you start killing people in the streets and lying about it and, you know, basically negating elections and basically trying to stack the odds in your favor no matter what. Again, people's patience, it's going to run out at some point. You know, it's weird to think back at 2000, where George W. Bush was elected with a minority of the vote, and think that those were the better times. that's when democracy wasn't really in peril. We sure felt like it was at the time. But we had no idea. We had no idea what we were in for. And now, you know, over 20 years later, I wonder if we can ever get back to how good it was in 2000.
Yeah, I mean, civilities, it's like, it's a nice, polite idea that we agree on. And given. It's mm-hmm. just not a given. Like, I can sit here, I'm abiding, being gentle, speaking in intelligent ways, but mark my words, I'm as human as you are.
And we all are.
And if wrong is right and right is wrong, you know, we can play all day long.
Well, three bits of good news. Three good things that Trump did, actually. He basically has halted most traffic stop arrests by ICE. We'll see if that actually goes anywhere. He's basically backing down on the crazy plan to charge a toll for everybody in the Strait of Hormuz, which is what Iran was planning on doing. And Trump said that's outrageous. And then now it's his plan to do that. Okay, backing down from that. And he's also giving $5 million to E. Jean Carroll, as my old judge, Judge Kaplan of Manhattan, has demanded that he do. So it's not really a nice thing he's doing. He's just basically being told to do something that is commanded by a court. And it doesn't make up for the utter nonsense that we're hearing about, where New York Times reporters are now being subpoenaed because they reported on the new Air Force One that was donated by Qatar. This is crazy. This is insane. This is scary. But basically, reporters are reporting on something that is of interest to everybody in this country, and we have every right to know about it, what the new plane is like, what features it has, what features it doesn't have. They sent people to homes of New York Times reporters to serve them subpoenas, to drag them in front of court, to intimidate them for doing their job. And there has never been as direct an attack on the press, on the free press, as this. So we have some interesting battles ahead of us. But we're also out of time, and we have the second half of the semifinal ahead of us, so I can hardly wait to get back to that. Hopefully nobody ruins it. I want to thank everybody for listening, and please write to us, otw@2600.com. That's our email address. We'd like to hear your feelings. If you have any bicycling experiences, we'd like to hear about those.
Yeah, if you're starting a bicycle team, you know, let me know.
Yeah, yeah. If the big boy steam engine is going through your town out west, it's heading back to Wyoming. It's in Ohio now, I think. Definitely try and see that, because that's always, well, I mean, it's only happened once, going all the way out east. But it's in the west most every other year, and it is the event of the 250th anniversary, I think. And it's all over YouTube, so just look for the big boy steam engine, and you'll see all kinds of fun videos. All right, we are going back to the World Cup. And tomorrow we'll see England and Argentina, two countries that were at war. And hopefully they can settle their differences in a more civilized way. Good night, everyone.
belong to Gun and Family. Great.
The Panasonic.